This episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast is presented by Sling. Coming up this weekend, we have the Premier League title race, as well as the race in Ligue 1 and elsewhere. Many games actually available too for the U20 World Cup on Fox Sports, all available through Sling.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this episode, we discuss the latest developments about MLS giving away its Apple product for free, as well as, I'm sure, talking about lots of the soccer going on around the world. It's been a big, huge week for football, with Manchester City, Inter Milan, Sheffield Wednesday, Coventry City and Luton Town stealing the headlines, among others. Kartik, what's been your highlight from this week thus far?
I guess, you know, if you want to talk about tactics, it's Jose Mourinho effectively parking four buses in front of Leverkusen, not even trying to counterattack. Europa League semifinal was very unique in that we talk about Jose parking the bus, but he there's counterattacking, there's smash and grab involved in that. In this match, going into the second leg with a 1-0 lead, and which, by the way, the 1-0 was against a run of play in Rome, they didn't even try and play. I mean, even for Mourinho, it was remarkable. Peak Mourinho. Xabi Alonso, former player for Mourinho, couldn't figure out a way around it. So to me, that's probably the standout moment of the week. I have never seen such a one-sided match, because sometimes stats don't tell the whole story. One-sided match where the team that dominated couldn't score.
Wow. Yeah, I missed that one. I mean, that's the thing, right? There's so many different games happening at the same time. I was watching a little bit of the Europa Conference League with West Ham United against AZ Alkmaar. And, of course, Fiorentina moving on to the Europa League final, where they'll face Roma. So it's been a big week. For me, Kartik, it's been a crazy morning. I know things are crazy on the Krishnaya side of the family, but this morning I was getting ready to hit record on the podcast, and then smoke, honestly, smoke started coming out of the mixer. And so I'm in my studio. There's smoke fumes in this room, but most of it's gone away. So that's why, listeners, I have to apologize if there's any, if the audio doesn't sound as good this week, that's why. So I'm actually doing it differently, recording it through Skype instead of through the mixing equipment. When I saw smoke coming up from the equipment, I was like, okay, this is not good. This does not smell good. And this is, so I'm going to have to go out and get a different mixer, some equipment, but we shall move on. Speaking of moving on, Kartik, I mean, there's a lot to get to. There's lots of different things we can talk about, but I do want to talk about some changes from Major League Soccer. We talked a little bit about it last week, where MLS announced that they're going to offer, are now offering, a free trial of MLS Season Pass. It's good news, or good news for fans who want to go ahead and give it a try and see what it's all about. Well, it looks like MLS is basically having a yard sale right now, because it's giving away more of its product for free. MLS 360, the Whiparound Show, is now offered for free on Apple TV. And this is something, going back a couple months ago, I think I slipped up and said, yeah, well, MLS 360, nobody knows it's even available for free on Apple TV. Well, my mistake, it wasn't free for Apple TV. It was free for Apple TV Plus, which is a big difference, right? Apple TV is free. Apple TV Plus, you have to subscribe to. It's a streaming service like Peacock or Paramount Plus. So now MLS 360, beginning this weekend, is available for free on Apple TV. So getting that whip around show in front of more people, as well as offering it also already, as it has been, on Apple TV Plus, and then also on MLS Season Pass. Also, in addition to that, MLS 360 is now going to be offered for free on YouTube beginning this weekend. So we broke that news. We'll have to wait and see if it's going to be every weekend. I would imagine it would be. Also today, as we're recording this, each individual MLS club has communicated with their email database, all their fans, And then each club is offering a free month of MLS season pass. So all in all, Kartik, I mean, what else can MLS do, right? They're trying to make sure that more people are watching MLS season pass as well as MLS 360. What else can they do to give it away for free? And what are you hearing?
I don't know what else they can do. I mean, we've talked about this, I think it feels like every episode. And this is the same conversation as what can MLS do in terms of their overall television ratings and media presence in previous years when they were on linear television and were concerned about linear television ratings. I think for me, there's talk that in the industry that maybe they're going to throw MLS Season Pass in when you buy a new iOS device, give you a month free of that if you go and buy an iPhone from T-Mobile or whoever right now, or AT&T or Verizon, maybe you'll get a free month free of MLS season pass. They haven't done that yet, but that's what I'm hearing might be the next step, which is not along the lines of what I was thinking would actually help remedy this situation. It's just another kind of band-aid. Maybe trying to entice more people into the product compels them to stay. I guess you would think there has to be another way to try and hook people who are already soccer fans and are already paying for other streaming services and for other soccer products into this, but that doesn't seem to be the thinking.
Yeah, giving it away for free, if they did, I mean, if the sources that mentioned to you, Kartik, if they're talking about giving it away for free with each new iPhone, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because then you reach, you mean, a much bigger crowd, you mean, overnight, you mean, going into the millions of people now. And MLS and Apple could say, like, hey, MLS 360 is now available to X million number of people out there. So they can say, hey, you mean, it's going great. You mean, all these people have access to it. Now, whether they're watching it or not, we have to wait and see. So I think it's smart in many ways to try to get MLS Season Pass and MLS 360 out to as many people as possible. However, I think in some ways, though, too, they have to look beyond that. So maybe it's the Golazo Network offering it to them for free. Maybe it's going to, I don't know, ESPN or to NBC or trying to figure out other ways. How do we get MLS Season Pass? Well, actually, how do we get MLS 360 available for more to more people for free so they can look at that, they can watch it? And then the hope would be is that they would then sign up for MLS Season Pass. I mean, this season is a loss. This season is a loss for MLS. It's a loss for Apple. It's a big change. It's a massive change. And so far, it hasn't gone well in terms of, you mean, the mass public signing up for this and you mean, making it a success. So they have to try to introduce it to as many people as possible. My question, Kartik, is actually, I've got a few questions for you here. Is MLS 360 helping or hurting the growth of MLS? And the second question I have is MLS 360 strong enough to sell soccer fans on signing up for MLS Season Pass?
The first answer is it's having no impact one way or another. Not enough eyeballs are on it. Not enough people even know about it. The second one is it helps if people watch it. It definitely gives a league-wide perspective, which MLS is seeking, and can help hook fans into seeing other teams and understanding other styles of play. I mean, the thing that's happened in MLS that's a positive the last few years is that there's more diversity in style of play and in tactics in the league than there used to be. Every team used to play the same way. It really bothered me, which is why I was so excited when Jesse Marsh came into Red Bull New York and changed the way they play. And year one, you could tell, wow, this is fun, even though I was very unhappy they had sacked Mike Petke. I was like, wow, this is different. MLS has something that's actually different than this just kind of generic cookie cutter American way of playing. And that's evolved. I mean, Philly has taken it to a new level, especially, right, with Jim Curtin. So there's a lot MLS has going for it in terms of actual play, entertainment value, quality of football. But you need something to hook people. You need something like a movie trailer that gets you to go watch a movie. You need something like a book jacket that gets you to read a book. Those things are really important. It's not, and oftentimes some of the top grossing movies aren't the most entertaining or best movies. It's because that movie trailer was really good and got people to watch it. I guess the Premier League has been really good at that because as many people know, I don't believe the Premier League is the best league in the world. I don't think it's ever really been the best league in the world, but they get the most fans. So I think MLS 360 helps.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one too, because really with MLS 360, if you watch it, I'm not convinced that it's going to make people sign up for MLS Season Pass. I'm more convinced that if you happen to live in an area where there is an MLS team, and you watch MLS 360 and you see Austin, Texas as one example, that you would go ahead and actually maybe go to one of the games and actually buy tickets to a match and say, hey, this is a great experience. I'm not so convinced that MLS 360 is going to sell people on MLS Season Pass, especially if MLS 360 is available for free. Okay, Kartik, so MLS 360 is in a situation where more people have to watch it or more people have to be introduced to it so that at least it gives them an indication of the production level and how good it looks and the people in the studio. And then the hope is then that people may subscribe for MLS Season Pass. Maybe they will. That's just my concern is I think that, I don't know, if MLS 360 continues to be available for free, how much of an incentive is there to sign up for MLS Season Pass unless you're interested in one specific team?
Well, I think the incentive is there to watch the other free games, which some weeks those teams are going to be behind the paywall. I mean, I think it can work. It just is, again, difficult because of the price point. I cannot stress how much, and we said this in the last episode, how out of whack this price point is compared to other similar properties. WNBA, as we mentioned, $25 season pass on YouTube. Compare that to this.
Yeah, it's a mess, right? I mean, when you think about it in terms of the way, there's two sides to this. If you watch MLS season pass on a weekly basis and watch MLS 360 and watch the games, and then just watch that in that context. It's good. The quality of soccer isn't the greatest, but the production quality and the commentary for the most part, and the analysis for the most part, it's entertaining for the most part. Now, it's not Premier League, it's not Champions League, it's not Serie A, but it's entertaining. So what is that price point that kind of equals the value of that? And I don't think it's $99 a year. Maybe, like you said, maybe it's $25 a year, or maybe it's $50 a year. I think MLS in many ways at this point are probably thinking, okay, let's not focus on the price point. Let's just give it away for free and try to get people in free. I mean, that's the thing too, right? ESPN Plus, when you think about it, when it did launch initially, it was what, $4.99 a month? And then maybe a year later, it was like $5.99. And then slowly but surely, they've increased the price to like what it is now, which is like, what, $10 per month, which I still feel is good value for what I get. But they got me in early enough where I was like, it's so cheap, you may as well just sign up for it. And then price increases incrementally thereafter. MLS 360 went the other way, right? $99 a year. And then, okay, no free trial, but we will show some games for free. And now we're offering it for a free month. And then once they come out of this, I mean, maybe the price does change, or maybe they try to figure something out. But to me, they've gone in ass backwards on this whole thing. Kartik, what about San Diego this week? I just want to get your thoughts on the expansion announcement and what you make of it.
It's the same stuff I've said before about San Diego. It's an incredibly tough market. It's a market with two existing professional teams. The NISA team is connected to the largest and most prestigious youth system in the region in San Diego County, which is the Albion system, which has produced a number of really high-end pro players and U.S. men's national team players. You have the San Diego Wave, which has done a great job in terms of capturing the professional fandom market in that city on the men's side. They are a USL team. Landon Donovan's, of course, involved in the ownership and management of that team. Then you have the San Diego Wave, which currently, sorry, Portland, is the most popular women's professional team in the country. In addition, you have the complication, and I think I may have said this on the last podcast or previous recent podcast of ours, of the largest Liga Amekis fan base among English language dominant fans. Now, this is important because there are Liga Amekis fans throughout the U.S. We cover television ratings, right, Chris? And we always have Liga Amekis games at the top of that list in terms of Spanish language, right? What's on Univision and what's on Telemundo, what's on Fox Deportes. But there are English language dominant anglicized fans in the San Diego area that are fans of Club Tijuana, that are the fans of the Zolos. They cross the border. They go to matches. They are into that club. That club has been very successful. Now, I do believe there is the opportunity for some of these fans to also support the MLS side. But I do also think it's going to be a lot harder than it has been in other markets. Basically, what happened in Nashville is the team that had started in NPSL, worked its way up through the USL league structure, became the MLS team. What happened in St. Louis is the USL team went away for the MLS team. What happened in Austin is the USL team never had a foothold there and they knocked them out in 1 year. What has happened in other markets is similar. USL teams moving up or no USL team. San Diego, you have an NWSL team. You have a USL team. You have a NISA team. And most importantly, in my book, is you have Tijuana right across the border. I think this is an enormous challenge for MLS. They will get their piece of the pie. There's no question about it. But will they create the same sort of environment long-term that Austin, Nashville, Charlotte, Atlanta have created? I have my doubts.
Yeah, it's a great news for San Diego. If you live in that area and you want to support a MLS team that's going to launch in 2025, and in competition, sometimes is good, not always, but I think it's good news for San Diego. It's good news for Major League Soccer in terms of their bank statements. However, I think the more expansion teams that MLS creates, to me, it's the actual national television product becomes less attractive. The league is diluted. I mean, as you add more and more teams, this will be team number 30. The quality level is diluted. And I think that then when you look at a national TV product, so such as MLS Season Pass and MLS 360, yes, it'll be great for the first couple of weeks of that season in 2025 when that team debuts in a stadium and, you know, everything that goes into that. There's that hype factor. But after a few weeks, that wears off and then you kind of see the quality of the players on the pitch across the entire league. So, yeah, it's more the same. I mean, it's the biggest deal that MLS has gotten in terms of expansion. My biggest concern really is with MLS, it seems to be that almost every decision that they make is focused on expansion. And I think when they have their eyes set on trying to figure out, okay, now that number 30 is in the can, who's going to be number 31? And focusing so much of the efforts and time and energy on expanding the league because of those expansion checks, my concern is, okay, what about the rest of the league? I mean, nothing seems to be changing in terms of the calendar, the regular season becoming more meaningless, a playoff structure that's where you have 60% of the teams qualifying for the playoffs. So those types of things, those things that will have a positive impact on what we're watching from a national product. On a local level, this is great for MLS, right? It's great for California. It's great for San Diego. On a national level, that's where I think that they're losing the plot. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag. We've got a lot in this week, so let's go right to that. MLS season pass pricing, you mentioned that about the WNBA. Darth Bill has some feedback. Darth Bill says, I get Big Ten Network Plus each fall for women's soccer and volleyball. I got into these while going to college because they were free. They offer replays on any Fox and Big Ten Network linear games, so you don't miss anything. It's a good service, but quality is sometimes lacking. Not every game has commentary, which is a selling point, but also you sometimes have no idea of the score. I'm looking forward to the USL's latest USL Super League. I go to local games, either UWSL or WPSL, so anything like that might help the ladies, the more the better. Dave says that a listener questioned whether any US sports offered a lower price for limited content. Big Ten Plus, a big streaming service with games not on the BTN linear, but where BTN has rights, has all sports, all teams package, a one sport, all teams package, and a one team, all sports package. Major League Baseball used to, or still do, give a discount for single team, Major League Baseball TV, etc. Regarding the MLS Apple, I see parts of it differently than what you shared in the recent podcast. Number one, free trials, another discounting ubiquitous in streaming. You can quibble the timing, but I do not see this decision by MLS and Apple as outside the norms of Peacock or Paramount Plus, etc. Number two, MLS got ahead of the RSN Regional Sports Network blow-up and ensured any hardcore fan can legally access every game no matter what happens in bankruptcy court. Not every team in every sport has that certainty. Number three, ESPN and TUDN have a deep understanding of sports fans based on decades of experience. A risk for Major League Soccer is that they may be Apple's guinea pig. I get little sense that MLS executives understand sports fans well. In addition to a loss of buzz and casual fans, I suspect that MLS-Apple partnership misses the expertise of ESPN and TUDN. Kartik, what's your take on that one in terms of especially Dave's comments about MLS maybe missing out on some of these veteran TV executives that could be kind of giving maybe some additional input or recommendations that maybe MLS is missing out on right now?
Yeah, I think that that's a big part of it. I mean, you don't have necessarily the expertise in broadcasting soccer and trying to broadcast to a macro audience. I think that's absolutely a great, great point. And part of the risk of going with what is effectively a startup, which is what Apple is.
Yeah, a big startup, but still a startup nevertheless. I mentioned before, and actually I think I didn't finish my thought, but I said there's two camps with MLS Season Pass. There's the one camp where you watch the service and you're entertained. It's not the greatest, but it is what it is. It's decent. And then there's the other side of it, which is that the people that haven't tried MLS Season Pass or maybe watched a game but never went back to it. And that audience is going to be more difficult to win over based on the competition that's out there, based on pricing, based on a whole host of different factors. I mean, one example was this week we talked about San Diego, the San Diego press conference to announce the team being number 30 and getting an expansion team. Normally, that would be on YouTube, like simulcast. Normally, it'd be on, I think, the MLS soccer website. It'd be available in several different places, sometimes maybe even Twitter. However, this one was only on MLS Season Pass. And I tried logging in to watch it, and then I guess it asked for my Apple ID. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what my Apple ID is. I could go back later and log in, but it was just the whole, you mean, just really not convenience, the inconvenience of the whole thing where I'm just wanting to watch something simple and I can't. And you go to YouTube, you go to the MLS channel there, and they're missing a lot of content that Apple has. So that's part of it, too. For that bigger audience that hasn't been won over by MLS Season Pass, to me, you want to make MLS content available everywhere. You mean, to make it as easy as possible, right? So, yes, you can get it through Apple TV Plus and MLS Season Pass, but elsewhere outside of that ecosystem, make it as easy as possible for people to find those games or highlights or press conferences. don't put it all behind kind of a walled garden. And I think that's where we're at right now, is that if you're an MLS fan, you're probably subscribing to MLS Season Pass and enjoying it. But for the 95% of the people outside of that wall, it's not happening, right? It's practically invisible. You know, we're not really talking about MLS, what's happening on the field. Everything's about what's happening behind that that walled garden. All right, next up is Rob. Rob says, Chris and Kartik, I think you guys hit on the major issue that MLS faces in that they compete in a global soccer market, whereas other American sports do not. The reason ratings are stagnant is because they are intent on running the league like other U.S. sports, where the regular seasons are essentially meaningless. Why watch games that do not matter when you can watch the Premier League, Serie A, etc., where every game means something? I say this as a MLS season ticket holder, Nashville Soccer Club, and a member of the supporters group. Honestly, over the years, I've become more interested in the tailgate scene rather than the game itself, because there is really little difference between 1 point and 3 points. In my view, promotion and relegation or a more exclusive playoff format would help, but I can't see either of those happening. As long as Don Garber and MLS follow the American sports model, they will not be able to challenge other leagues around the world for the attention of viewers. It's the elephant in the room that no one outside of World Soccer Talk is willing to discuss. Thank you for that. On staggered kickoff times, Kartik has mentioned before that most fans of MLS teams do not watch other MLS teams, and I agree. The members of my supporters group know very little about other MLS teams or the league as a whole. The people complaining about the lack of staggered kickoff times are a very small minority. Most match-going fans really like the stability and routine it offers. Wow, some really good points there by Rob. I've seen this firsthand, Kartik. I mean, going to some Orlando games with MLS fans and the tailgate scene before the game, and is I mean, if anything, more exciting than the game itself. And you get to the game itself, and sometimes it's the fans are not even paying attention to what's happening on the pitch. They're in the supporters' ends. They're waving their flags. They're chanting. They're kind of talking to friends. And the game itself is almost secondary. Have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, and they're not even interested in what's going on in the rest of the league. So that's the other indication of this, is that I think that there's everything Rob says, I agree with. I think that there's a lack of interest in other clubs. There's maybe not the culture, supporters culture. And when I say supporters culture, it's not just people who are members of supporters groups. If you go to a match I was going to use the Bundesliga, but that's a bad example because everybody's a member of their club. But if you go to, let's just take the Champions League match between Milan and Inter, a week ago. The first leg, the leg that was technically Milan's home leg at the San Siro. There was an atmosphere throughout the ground among all the supporters. And in fact, AC Milan supporters have been criticized in Italy for being less vocal, less active, less vibrant than the fans of other big clubs recently. That's been a talking point within the Italian media. And you saw how everybody who attends the match can be in unison in a big occasion like that. That's a perfect example. I'm not just talking about members of the supporters group. Now, if you go to Orlando, I have a lot of experience. That's the MLS team I have the most experience with also. If you go to Orlando, there are people singing and standing up and cheering and in the supporters section. Now, of course, I have to say that has gotten weaker through the years. It's not the same now as it was in 2016 or 2017. And then you have the rest of the crowd that very much it's like going to a NASCAR race where they're kind of passively paying attention, or to a college football game where the play takes 5 seconds and then there's nothing going on the next 2 minutes. So I think it's a fan culture thing, honestly.
The other thing about this, too, I want to mention, too, is that when MLS had the TV deals last year and prior, they were in many ways riding the coattails of ESPN, Fox, Univision, etc. Now they're on their own. Now they're way out there on their own. they don't have that. So I think that's part of it too. When it was on TV and you'd see games on television now and again, maybe, you know, I mean, they were more visible. Now they're less visible because they're on their own without that help from those broadcasters other than Fox. And really, that doesn't really care or make any difference anyway. So it's a difficult place to be for the league. So it's a difficult place. It's a lonely place. It's a place where they're going to have to fight to be relevant, to get that product out there, to get more people signed up. And being on your own, kind of being independent, really, in a way, without the big TV broadcasters, I wouldn't say sink or swim, but it's pretty close to it in terms of they really have to focus on what they are and how they're different. And if it is, going back to what you said a couple of weeks ago, Kartik, is Major League Soccer, they have to decide, are they a local entertainment option or are they a national league? And I'm sure their aspirations are to be an international league. But to be international, I think they have to conquer the national league first, but they really have to have those big signings, which is going to just put band-aids on some of the issues, a lot of the issues that they have. So a lot of inward thinking definitely needs to happen. Scott is up next, and Scott says, I would love to be a fly on the wall at MLS HQ. I can only imagine the level of frustration that they must be experiencing, trying to wag the dog by the tail. Kartik is 100% spot on. MLS must fix the competition format issue to gain a national audience. Here's a simple solution that works within the scope that they have now. Two campaigns, two seasons, a spring and summer season, and then a summer and fall season. The first campaign would be the spring and summer season. That'd be 17 games. The top clubs advance from the West and the East to the League's Cup, and then they play the Liga MX clubs. The second campaign, which is the season, the summer-fall season, the table resets, another 17 games. The top clubs advance again, this time to the MLS Cup playoffs. The club with the highest points over both campaigns wins the Supporters' Shield. This would solve the competition format problem and make every game meaningful. It also produces an opportunity for MLS to limit the number of clubs who advance in these tournaments because the club, the table resetting in the second half keeps all clubs invested. Love the pod. Yeah, it's weird. There are lots of different options. We've given some in previous episodes, and here Scott has some good recommendations too. It's crazy that we're in, 2023, and MLS has still not changed the formats other than making it less meaningful, right, in terms of the playoffs and just putting more games into the playoffs. That's not the way to go, but they keep on kind of doubling down on that. Daniel says, hey, guys, long-time listener, but I cannot stay silent anymore. Apologies for the long message and rant. Number one, promotion and relegation is dead. It will never happen. MLS are too stubborn to implement it. Don't tell me they can't do it. A country like Bosnia and Herzegovina can have promotion and relegation, but MLS can't because we don't have the infrastructure. Is a reason? Give me a break. Fix you.
I agree.
That's a good point. Fix USL League 2 and combine NISA USL League 1. That's how you start promotion relegation. Forget Major League Soccer, USL Championship to USL 1 to USL 2, and fix NPSL. That's another mess. Number two, the calendar. I cannot stress this enough. Who wants to play in Orlando in August when it's sticky and almost 35 degrees Celsius out? Which is probably Fahrenheit, is like, probably 95 to 100. And with humidity, over 100. Number three, playoffs. They are so useless. Don't tell me we will become like Europe. I'd rather see that some team who went zero and whatever wins MLS Cup like Seattle did that one season where they had a horrible regular season and won that meaningless cup. Number four, MLS Season Pass. How come iFollow works so well, but MLS Season Pass seems to fail hard? We don't need numbers to see how bad that league is. Even Messi or Ronaldo couldn't save that stubborn league. MLS has and always will be about Don Garber bowing to MLS owners. At least the ex-commissioner of USL had the guts to stand up for the league. Soccer Don does not. And that this is coming from someone who has watched the league since 2015. I will not be renewing my subscription to MLS Season Pass when it ends on June 6th. I have had it with this league. They are so far gone. It is sad. Wow. Yeah. And Daniel was some really kind of heartfelt. He's not holding back.
Yeah, I can agree with him on all those points. And that Seattle, specific Seattle point I brought up repeatedly on this show through the years, that I think they won 11 or 12 matches without winning a game. So think about that in Europe. You're in a relegation fight if that happens, right? You're in this position where you might be mid-table and then suddenly you're fighting relegation. You might be in the top four and then suddenly you're looking over your shoulders if you go 12 matches without a victory or 11 matches without a victory. I remember they snapped it against Orlando. That's why I remember the streak really well. They snapped it in a nationally televised game against Orlando in Seattle. And then they won MLS Cup. And that's fine. You know, their teams, there was a year Wigan was relegated from the Premier League and they won the FA Cup. We have other examples of that throughout Europe. It's okay. If you look at MLS Cup as a cup competition, sure, but you don't crown the league champion based on that. There's something really strange also about the fact that they won't change the format, to Daniel's point, but they changed the playoff composition and structure every second season, it feels like. Right? They're so invested in the playoff format, or the idea of playoffs, the concept of playoffs. They have tried every conceivable way to make it work. And it hasn't. And there's also an issue of television ratings going down for these playoff games, other than MLS Cup itself, and ticket sales sometimes not being as robust as they need to be for the playoffs. I think if they just had one consistent format and they stuck with it for 8 to 10 years, maybe that would work. But then again, when you're expanding every year and you're adding new teams, and you're having to shuffle conferences. That's another thing that they have is conferences. These things can never be consistent from year to year. So how do you create a compelling product that people are going to want to pay $99 a year to watch on Apple, in addition to the all the other issues we've talked about Apple devices, etc., if you're not even consistent in your expectations and what you're producing from year to year? Heck, was it this season that they announced the playoff format 3 or 4 days before the season, or was that last year? I'm trying to remember. It was this season. So you don't, if you're an MLS general manager, you don't even know how to construct your roster. You could argue that, because you're constructing your roster, you're going through a preseason training, and you don't know the format of the league or the expectation necessarily, which is, you know, this is something I come back to with Europe, Chris, when people say, oh, it was really unfair on this team or that team, and they got this happened, that happened. I would always say, okay, yeah, maybe this team had injuries, that happened, something else happened, but you know, you have an expectation before the season. The rules are the same for everyone. There's an even playing field. And if some team gets lucky and some other team doesn't, that's the way the ball bounces. But in MLS, literally, the format changes every year. The expectation changes every year. So, yeah, there are all kinds of problems.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who are MLS fans or fans of MLS clubs would say, well, isn't it great how wonderful it is every year with Major League Soccer, how we have a different champion, you mean, most years. My answer to that is, you're comparing apples to oranges. You mean, so if you took the Premier League as an example, you know, season runs from August through May, and said, okay, we're going to apply the same kind of playoff structure to the Premier League. So from August till May, you mean, yes, most of that season would be relatively meaningless, because 60% of those teams would qualify for the playoffs. And that's kind of where it really counts. So you take the top 12 teams from the Premier League, and then at the end of the season, you mean, yes, you give me a token supporters shield to Manchester City, but you said, okay, at the end of the season, now we're going to take the top 12. So you have teams such as Crystal Palace, Chelsea, Fulham, Brentford, Aston Villa, Spurs, Brighton, Liverpool, et cetera, right? And the top four competing in a cup competition. By that point, you mean, probably the team that's going to win that tournament is not going to be the best team over that season. It's going to be the team that's going to be in the hottest streak at that moment in time. And it's a cup competition, so anything could happen. So you could have, conceivably, Crystal Palace or Brentford or Spurs or Brighton winning the Premier League Cup, so to speak. And that, yes, that would be exciting in some ways for them to lift a trophy. But meanwhile, I mean, most of the season would have been practically irrelevant. Okay. Daniel got us fired up there. All right, a couple more comments to go. Chris says, hi, guys. With the news that MLS is likely is adding a team in San Diego in 2025, it has me thinking about other cities that they could expand to. One such city is Phoenix, where Major League Soccer is the only major league they currently don't have, even though the city supports the Phoenix Rising and USL quite well and is a regular host city for the Gold Cup. I am not sure that they would want MLS from the city government perspective, given how poorly they have treated the Cardinals of the NFL and especially the Coyotes of the NHL when it came to building new stadiums for them over the years. Because of this, I think MLS needs to be very careful about expanding there because they don't want to end up in a situation where they are constantly feuding with the city government over building a stadium. And then last but not least, in discussion about last week's episode about the USL Super League versus NWSL, Esteban Dido says, two women's D1 soccer leagues, that's a proper recipe for both of them to collapse. Only time will confirm this point of view. And that's quite possible, right? Hopefully not. Hopefully both of them will flourish. It will be interesting to see what U.S. soccer does here, too, especially with it being a women's league, too, right? And since Cindy Pollock-Cohn as the president of U.S. soccer and how good a job USL Super League has done thus far in terms of getting the message out, being clear about what they're planning on doing and offering something that's quite different than NWSL. There's an opportunity here for both of them to survive and thrive, ideally. U.S. soccer would say, hey, let's figure out a way to actually set this up so it's one league. I mean, that's practically impossible at this stage, but that's the type of leadership I think that they should be having those discussions and talking long term as well as short term.
Yeah, I do want to say that I think that one of the things that might come into play here is what league can also generate some investment from Europe. I know that's something USL is looking at and NWSL has looked at in the past. So that might tell us who wins this wins out. Maybe there'll be a merger at some point. That's also very possible.
Any thoughts, Kartik, about NWSL reporters being pretty silent about USL
Super
League?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that. I don't know that we have enough time on this podcast for me to get into it. But this has been a bugaboo of mine for 4 years now.
Because a couple of people, Neil Morris, who is based in North Carolina, and myself, who have experience with USL on the men's side, made it clear 4 years ago when USL started talking about the Super League project and getting a little more invested in the women's game. Actually, they started talking about this as early as 2017, but I remember specifically in 2019 saying to both he and I and Bo Dorr, a couple other people like that who have covered the USL on the men's side, talking about this is a serious thing. This is something that could enhance and elevate the game in the U.S. It also could be a major threat to NWSL from a business perspective. And it was essentially, I mean, again, I don't want to offend, I'm not going to name names here. I don't want to offend a lot of women's soccer insiders here. They do great job, great work. And there's been some fantastic reporting on the scandals recently from many of them. Some of them maybe not as much, but some of them very good. But it was almost laughed off like, oh, well, NWSL is this kind of chosen instrument. It's the chosen instrument of U.S. soccer. You know, no one else can get involved. And, you know, who cares about USL and lower division stuff? Not realizing kind of the giant potential of the women's game in the United States beyond the national team, right? And beyond having a league that just incubates the national team, which is what NWSL has done. For all intents and purposes, that's all it's done from a soccer perspective. There hasn't been this linkage in the pyramid that we need. And I would also say that a lot of these same people have a contempt for talking up the European Champions League, talking up Lyon and their success, and talking up what's going on at Atleti and what's happened at Barcelona and Chelsea and Man City. There's a very, yeah, in, on the women's side, right. There's a very insular mentality among a lot of people who are involved in around NWSL. I was shocked, you know, this week. I thought, okay, this is the wake-up call. Now we're going to have a conversation. Well, it hasn't happened yet. Maybe it'll happen in a few weeks. But it's quite an insular group, Chris. I mean, I could do a whole podcast on this, honestly. So I'll just
stop there.
Okay. We've seen the same thing, too, about Major League Soccer, where it has been and not as bad as it used to be because – I mean, I think most of the reporters for MLS are now working for MLSsoccer.com. But in the past, there has been a very insular approach where they've purposely avoided any topics outside of MLS or ones that were in competition with MLS in terms of leagues or cups or competitions, that they would purposely not talk about that. We're not the biggest MLS fans in the world by any means. I mean, we like the league. We want to see it succeed. But we're not going to shy away from talking about MLS or talking about...
Let me tell you something. MLS, people who cover MLS, this might come as a shock to a lot of the reformers and people that listen to our podcast. The reporters that cover MLS are infinitely more critical than the reporters that cover NWSL. So that should tell you something.
Critical about the league or critical...
Both critical about the league and critical about U.S. national team players that are in both leagues, right? I mean, MLS reporters will criticize Brandon Vasquez or Sebastian Legette or whoever, right? Aaron Long. There are certain U.S. women's national team players that won't get criticized for their play in NWSL, and when they go to Europe and they flop, which several have, it's about those leagues not being of sufficient quality or whatever, or it's an ignored data point. And then in terms of the league itself, part of the reason I think these scandals weren't blown out of the water, it took till 2021, and they weren't blown out of the water in 16 or 17, or maybe even earlier, 2015, was there is a cozy relationship between a lot of reporters and protecting NWSL as if it's a cause, right? It's their job to protect women's soccer and promote women's soccer. I get that. I agree with that. But that doesn't mean you pull your punches on critical reporting. I mean, I think there's a very notable exception in Jeff Kasuf from Equalizer. He's fantastic. I think he's the best in the business. But otherwise, I mean, I could go down the list. I'm not indicting everybody else who covers NWSL, by the way, but I could go down the list and make critiques. And MLS, yes, there are a lot of MLS reporters and writers that I think are very biased and very protective of MLS, but it's not quite at the same level as it is on the women's side. So this USL thing could really shake things up, Chris. And maybe this is a conversation for another podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
On the broader scale.
Yeah, when we have more time, because there's definitely some things I want to add to that, too. So, listeners, if you do want to get involved with the show in terms of asking any questions, sharing your opinions, observations, etc., especially when it comes to soccer, television, streaming, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. There's a few different ways you can reach us. You can go ahead and email us, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to the website, which is worldsoccertalk.com, and then click on podcasts and then leave your comments in the comment section there. You can go to facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, send us a message, or you can tweet us @worldsoccertalk. Of course, too, you can leave a voicemail, which is 561-247-4625. I'll go ahead and edit in the audio that came in last week from one of our listeners, which is really good audio in terms of a voicemail talking about the issues with MLS Season Pass from his perspective. So I'll go ahead and play that now.
Hi, what's going on this year? I'm a diehard fan, and then I would like to watch soccer this year. I cannot watch even one game. Why? Since the season began, I never watched one game. Even I try, I live in Orlando, Florida, and then I like to watch Lion. Every time, every Saturday, I try. Everything I do, even I want to buy the game, and then I can't go in. I cannot go in. This thing is very difficult this year.
And then, Kartik, following up, what about Beyond the 90? Where can listeners find you there for podcasts and other writings?
Yeah, at beyondthe90.substack.net. Heavy U.S. Open Cup coverage recently. I think, time permitting, I'm going to do a lot on Coventry and Luton next week. It's a final I'm very excited about. I will talk about it on our pod next week as well, Chris. But you can look for some heavy historical analysis of both clubs there at beyondthe90.substack.com.
Okay, great. Well, we covered a lot this episode. I think it's still a little bit high from the fumes of this mixer blowing. I can still smell it. I'm going to have to kind of get out of the studio and get some fresh air, I think, after this podcast. But on behalf of everyone, thank you for listening. And Kartik, heading into another weekend with some massive soccer games from around the world. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.